town, Chicago is.
The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference is coming to Chicago for its one and only 2019 conference. You can meet and hear Ross Douthat, Matt Harrison, Wesley Smith, Aaron Wolf, Hans Feeney, and Will Whedon Friday, June 7th and Saturday, June 8th at Concordia University, Chicago. Learn more and register at issuesetc.org. Chicago is. Some protesters and some participants in the General Conference of the United Methodist Church meeting in St. Louis, walking the halls of the conference, singing an old black spiritual. They wanted the One Church plan. What would this plan have done with respect to the issue of the LGBT agenda in the United Methodist Church? Joining us for an update on the General Conference of the United Methodist Church, Mark Tooley, president of the Institute on Religion and Democracy based in Washington, D.C., and author of the book Taking Back the United Methodist Church. Mark, welcome back.
Great to be with you.
I think NBC, The Washington Post, The Wall Street Journal, and The New York Times, in anticipation of this meeting, all in one form or another, use the word split, schism, something like that for the United Methodist Church. Is that a realistic prospect?
Well, it depends on what you mean by a schism or a split. On the current trajectory, the church having once again rejected same-sex marriage and actively gay clergy and potentially on its way to tightening its enforcement procedures on those issues, I do see a potential schism for liberal churches and liberal individuals to create a potentially new liberal Methodist denomination.
What was the One Church plan and how did it fare in voting at the General Conference today?
The One Church plan would have overturned the church's biblical teachings, confining sex to husband and wife, and would have allowed local churches to decide for themselves whether or not to host same-sex unions, and also would have opened up the possibility of actively gay clergy. And the plan was heavily promoted by the American bishops and the American church bureaucracy and virtually the whole U.S.-based church establishment.
So what ended up happening when it came before the General Conference?
It was defeated yesterday. It was rejected by delegates when the convention was meeting as a legislative committee. And then again, it was defeated by the plenary session of the General Conference this morning by a 55-45 margin. So I think it took a lot of, probably most of the establishment by great surprise that they did not have the influence they assumed they had.
You have said this, I'm quoting you, liberalism's been Methodism's establishment for 100 years, bishops, agencies, seminaries, but never fully captured the laity. What do you mean by that?
Well, that arguably is the great miracle of all of this, that theological liberalism took over Methodism's seminaries early in the 20th century, over 100 years ago, and had all the agencies of the church 60, 70 years ago, and almost all of the bishops for much of the last 70, 80 years. And so evangelical, orthodox Methodist beliefs, you would have thought would have been stamped out by now after over a century of liberal control. But in fact, the evangelical subculture of Methodism continued to operate and to hum along and somehow to survive without any encouragement from the church establishment.
Give us a history here, if you would, Mark, because this has been something that the United Methodists, especially in America, and we'll talk about the foreign aspect of it in a minute, but here in America, this issue of human sexuality has been a long argument, hasn't it?
Yes. The Methodist Church has debated it at every governing convention since 1972, and obviously it was debated for years, and ultimately the liberals won in almost all of the other historically liberal mainline Protestant denominations. But Methodism is virtually almost the only major mainline denomination that has not surrendered its biblical standards on sexuality in terms of its official policies.
You say in terms of its official policies, there's a lot of mischief that takes place at the level of the congregations, isn't there?
Lots of mischief. Obviously, there are thousands of liberal clergy, and most of the bishops are liberal, but some of them are radical and look for ways to defy church law. And so there are radical congregations with the acquiescence of higher-ups on the West Coast and the Northeast that almost function as though they're autonomous from church law.
So what were the most significant actions taken by the General Conference this weekend?
Well, the General Conference was called specifically to focus on one issue, which was the church's teachings on sexuality. So there were the two major plans, the one church plan backed by liberals and the traditional plan reaffirming the church's current teachings and tightening enforcement backed by traditionalists, obviously. And so the one church plan has been defeated, and now delegates are still debating the traditional plan.
And do you expect that to pass?
It probably will. It's beating back hostile amendments so far. There clearly is a 55-45 conservative majority among the delegates. So unless there's some enormous parliamentary snafu or disruption, if it gets a straight up or down vote, it should pass in some form.
What is the gracious exit petition? What are those?
Those were to allow, since the church building properties are owned by the denomination, not by the congregation, those would allow dissenting congregations who could not live under church law to leave with their property.
And what was decided there is, was any decision taken?
Well, they were approved yesterday in legislative committee. In fact, they got more votes than did the one church plan. And they theoretically come up for a vote today in plenary. So we'll have to see what happens. The church's top court ruled that the plans for gracious exit, as currently stated, are unconstitutional. So to pass, to be effective, they would have to be amended by the delegates.
I understand, I might have this wrong, that the leader of the United Church of Christ has penned an open letter to congregations of the United Methodist Church, inviting them, if they are dissatisfied with the present direction of the UMC, to join that church body.
He did, although the letter seems to have only been up for a couple of hours and since has been removed from the UCC website. So it appears to have provoked some controversy.
What does that tell you about the place of the United Methodist Church in mainline liberal Protestantism, Mark?
Well, that it's on a different trajectory. It's not following the U.S. mainline Protestant path in terms of ongoing liberalization on sexuality, because uniquely among the denominations, United Methodism has a wide global membership with almost 45% of its members outside the U.S., most of them in Africa, and soon to be a majority in Africa. And so that has kept the Methodists from following the liberal path followed by Episcopalians, Presbyterians, et cetera.
Was that influence in evidence in St. Louis?
Well, certainly it was decisive. The liberal one church plan would have passed easily if it was U.S. delegates only.
Has there been any polling on where United Methodists in America stand on the issue of homosexuality, the LGBTQ agenda?
There's a recent poll by the church showing that lay people in the U.S. Self-identified as, I believe it was 44% conservative and 20% liberal, the rest being centrist. So that's some indication. But also, a few years ago, there was a poll by an outside study that tried to gauge opinions on same-sex marriage, and I don't have that in front of me. My recollection was a majority of self-identified United Methodists in the U.S. population approved of same-sex marriage in some form, but a majority of actively church-going Methodists did not.
Finally then, Mark, if the General Conference approves the traditional plan before the time limit in St. Louis, what will change, if anything, in the United Methodist Church?
Well, potentially, the most adamant liberals or who are most passionate on LGBTQ issues will be so discouraged and realize that the handwriting is on the wall, literally, and they will begin to withdraw to create their own new liberal denomination.
Mark Tooley is president of the Institute on Religion and Democracy based in Washington, D.C. He is author of the book Taking Back the United Methodist Church. You can find a link to this book at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Mark, thank you very much for being our guest.
Always a pleasure. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll discuss the Lord's Prayer petitions, Lead Us Not Into Temptation, But Deliver Us From Evil, both of them together, as the conclusion of the Lord's Prayer. Pastor Paul McCain of Concordia Publishing House will be our guest. We'll also have Pastor Tom Baker lead us in a Sunday school lesson on Jesus turning water into wine. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.